What does that entail? So home maintenance was things like yard work, snow shoveling, minor repairs. The second most important reason for remaining, for people to choose the option to remain in their homes was home support services, such as light housekeeping, meal preparation, bathing, dressing, etc. The last one, the least important, was transportation, and I think some of this is because of the initiative that's already in place, the Queens Transit Society, transportation that is available. In-home nursing care is provided through VLN, and so on. Public and outdoor spaces, buildings, parking. So this was a wide swath. We looked at North Queens as well as South Queens and looked at the more urban environment of Caledonia, as well as Liverpool. So South Queens residents expressed concern primarily about sidewalks. This came up over and over again because they had the opportunity to write comments in the survey, to express their own comments, and they were concerned about the fact that the sidewalks in town are not consistently cleared of snow and ice. This was another area that came up, another topic that came up again and again, that the parking area in front of the post office in Liverpool was very congested and also was not being cleared of snow and ice. So people were worried about falling, slipping, and so on. Milton and Hunts Point, and I realize that these are outside of the jurisdiction in terms of snow removal, but they did complain that there was poor winter maintenance and snow clearance of roads in their particular areas. This was interesting. There was a suggestion to add more benches along Main Street for people so that they could stop. Again, considering that this is looking at our senior population. And this is something else that came up, that there is a need for year-round washroom facilities at the parks. Clearance of walkways and parking lots of municipal parks. This was nice. 66% of respondents agree they feel generally safe to walk in Liverpool at any time. Because 81% of our respondents drove themselves, transportation wasn't a huge issue for that demographic. The rest used taxis, volunteer drivers, walked, biked, and one used an electronic scooter. And I'm sure we've all seen him around town. So social and volunteer participation, recreation, near or in your area. These were the categories that have been extrapolated from this new survey. Participation in community activities. The vast majority are involved somehow, either with social groups, service clubs, or volunteer organizations. Communications and information. Some surprising results came here. So we looked at ways information is currently received versus the preferred methods. And word of mouth was the number one way that people found out about what's going on in their area. And look, this is what their preferred way to receive the communication was through an email that was coming from whatever source. Bulletin boards, which are very widely used, were the least effective means of receiving information. So that was a bit of a surprise. Here we have bulletin boards kind of midway, but far beyond that, people prefer to receive information by email, social media, or internet websites. Health services and community support was another category. So people are very, very happy with Queens General Hospital services. They rank them as excellent, 41%. The biggest concern, of course, is access to family practitioners. This was before we had expanded, and now we have two family practitioners, as most people know. So people have come off the waiting list. But at the time of when the survey was done, there were still people on a waiting list. One 90-year-old resident told me that she's been on a waiting list for 5 years for a family physician. Hopefully she's now has a family practitioner. In general, people are very happy with the municipal recreation services to meet their needs, 43%. Parks and outdoor spaces to meet needs. This is kind of very general, but in the report itself, it gives more detailed information. What is meant by that? 49% were generally happy. Social clubs that met needs, so this is the fundamental need to socialize and be part of the community. 49% found that this was good. Very small percentage said it was poor. And I think those were more in the remote areas that didn't have transportation. People were very happy with the grocery stores. Not very happy with the retail outlets to meet their needs, which is interesting. Again, they felt that the banks met their general needs. Legal services and government services, again, were at the high end, meeting their needs. Quality of life, very important question. How did people view themselves in terms of their quality of life? 57% of the respondents were very happy. Very small percentage were not. Factors that would enhance quality of life. This was a bit of a surprise. Here we see that the green bar that you can see here is opportunities to learn new things. And that was even high under the gray impact. So people want those opportunities. They want to be able to learn new things. How concerned are you about the following aspects of aging? And here's where the categories that were. Not surprising, health was the biggest issue for people. The most important things for that our respondents felt they wanted the municipal council to address was access to health care. It's the number one priority. Access to seniors housing. Rising living costs combined with relatively fixed incomes and availability of personal care and household support were the top four. How should the Region of Queens Municipality ensure the sustainability of seniors' programs and services? The majority felt that these should be targeted programs for those in need, as opposed to raising taxes here, or cost recovery for seniors' programs. Summary of recommendations. So these are literally quotes taken from the survey. Provide more suitable apartments or condos for seniors wanting to downsize. That came up again and again and again. Shorten waiting lists to get into a senior's apartment. A lot of frustration around that. Provide assistance with home property maintenance, like lawn mowing, snow shoveling, small house repairs in order to be able to remain in their own home. This was a suggestion, an independent living units with everything on one level. More quality seniors housing units. Here was a comment, I'm currently in my own home, which is too large, but no sustainable apartments or condos available. Please increase the number of units. Public outdoor spaces, buildings, parking. This was interesting. Make parking on Main Street free, like in Digby and Yarmouth. Again, came up sidewalks in Liverpool, often icy. There should be a crosswalk in front of PharmaSave. People felt walking to the corner was just too far. And I don't know about the rest of you, but I have certainly come across jaywalkers going across the street right in front of the PharmaSave. Front of post office and physio clinic poorly cleared of snow. Free parking in front of post office for Christmas, not good. It created a whole lot of congestion. Some cars park there for hours. People with mobility issues can't get in. We've all encountered that. Need more parking spaces near post office, current inadequate. I'm not sure where you put them, yeah, other than maybe build a parking garage. Need more accessible parking in Liverpool. And this is, of course, for those with mobility issues. Slow getting plowed out in winter. Provide benches on Main Street. And this is kind of a one-off, falling branches in Fort Point Park of concern. Transportation, so that was a category in itself, and people said that they found it too hard to get affordable transportation. Lack of speedy road maintenance after storm, kind of a revolving theme. Milton Roads north of Bridge on West Side need to be better cleared in winter. Sort of a vocal minority there. Terrible road maintenance in winter at Hunts Point. That's within the jurisdiction, I believe, of the province, but people want to have their say. Social and volunteer participation in recreation near or in your specific area. I wish there was a year-round swimming pool in South Queens with supervision. It is an exercise that helps seniors, especially those with physical handicaps, example arthritis. Would be good to have somewhere where a senior with government documents or wills could go at no cost for explanation and assistance. I believe that the library provides that service, but clearly people aren't aware of that, at least not widely. Senior center would be nice. I would say that it looks like the Amira Place, Queens Amira Place, is becoming that. Communications and information. South Shore Breakers should list more events. Public telephones that go directly to doctors, hospital, and emergency situation. Much as there are on university campuses where you just pick up the phone and it patches in directly somewhere, I think this was around people being concerned that someone has a heart attack, someone falls somewhere on the main street. People miss the advance. I do too. Region of Queens website should be updated regularly. Now, this was a bit of a conundrum because it was a contradiction from the fact that people wanted to get their communication by email, social media, or internet website. But some people felt that most older people don't have computers. And that's true. However, I would say that that is now a minority. Since 70 to 74 were 70 to 74 years of age was the highest demographic, and they, most of them responded as a result of internet connections. Struggle with self-serve lifestyle. I think we're all frustrated with this one, such as getting to talk to a real person on the phone instead of a computer message. Need more affordable, healthy foods in local stores. And this was, some people were talking about health food stores, which we don't have in our area, although they're very happy with the grocery stores. So health services and community support. Wait times at outpatients or emerge much too long. I think we all experience that frustration. Access to medical care with a family doctor is poor. Again, this was before we got the two new physicians. Wait times at the Queen's General Hospital are long and frustrating. Lack of health, oh here's, lack of health food products, food store. Need homes for extended care. Need more health services in our region, health care services, very specific, occupational therapy, etc. Need access to health care and family doctor. This is people that were on a waiting list, and we're still on a waiting list when they did the survey. Doctors shortage. I think that's across the country. Hard to recruit volunteers to their groups, to their organizations, to the volunteer groups. It's like someone had said, the same 10 people are doing all the work. I waited 8 weeks to see our nurse practitioner and have been waiting over a month for appointments to have yearly tests, which are already late. Expressing frustration. Good health care with family MD. More assistance required for seniors who end up paying for services they can't afford. And this had more to do with yard work and so on. We need an indoor swimming pool. I've heard that before. Need walk-in clinic. In-home support should be personalized, not having a different person ringing the doorbell every time a service is provided. Again, these are direct quotes. Rural cannot always get required services. Most of funding goes to higher populated areas. So what about their quality of life? Just get by. Income does not allow for much in Liverpool. Shopping is great for fun if you are in a higher income bracket. My money always runs out before the end of the month. Pine Grove Park, people like that. It's a healing place. Very muchly appreciated. And here again, most older people don't have computers. That goes sort of contradicts the survey results. That most do, but some do not. Indoor swimming pool is needed. So what are the next steps, the recommendations as a result of this? We've heard from the people. The five key milestones that the Public Health Agency of Canada, in collaboration with a number of provinces and other stakeholders, have identified pan-Canadian age-friendly community milestones or key steps for communities on the road to becoming age-friendly. First would be to establish an advisory committee that includes the active engagement of older adults. And I view that the Queen's Care Society already fulfills that role. Secure a local municipal council resolution to actively support, promote, and work towards becoming age-friendly. A number of municipalities in Nova Scotia have already done that, and numerous ones across Canada have. Establish a robust and concrete plan of action that responds to the needs identified by older communities in the community. Demonstrate a commitment to action by publicly posting the action plan. And commit to measuring activities, reviewing action plan results, and reporting on them publicly. So that was kind of a whirlwind of the results that we had, but there is a lot more detail in this 48-page document, as well as comparing what other municipalities in Nova Scotia have done towards an age-friendly community.
Any questions or comments of councilors? Deputy Mayor Kelly?
Do we get a copy of that?
Yes, I brought enough for all of the council members.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any surprises in that. I mean, we all know those things, and we've been talking about a lot of them for a long time, and for various reasons can or cannot do or working towards or slow whatever's happening. I mean, I think that it's most interesting is that there's a lot of surveys going on right now, and or in the past year.
Yeah.
It's nice to know that even though this is all about seniors, last year I'm the council liaison for the Queen's Community Health Board. Mm-hmm. They did their survey last year in the Western Zone and came back with 3,000 responses to their surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And their health plan for 2019 just came out, and therefore our housing security, food security, recreation and wellness, and community connection. So exactly what seniors want. But this is from anywhere from youth to seniors as well as included in this. Also most interesting as well. So like I say, all these things are connected together. We now have, and maybe it would be a good opportunity just so people know that there's another survey coming out, quality of life. This is through Engage Nova Scotia, is doing a quality of life survey. So then you'll probably get some more information, because this is, again, will be from youth to seniors as well, right across, they're doing this right across Nova Scotia,
mm-hmm.
through Engage Nova Scotia and through the provincial government, to look at what quality of life actually means. So you touched on that a little bit for seniors, what it actually means, whether they feel like they, most of them have a good quality of life, but then this will pinpoint exactly what does that mean to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things are interconnected, and,
yes.
and you know, I appreciate the information that you've brought forward today about seniors. I know that we have a lot of work to do regarding our senior safety coordinator, and you know, I'm looking at the bigger picture for that and interested in a community coordinator or a team of community coordinators, because we are missing that local link now in our community, and that is the biggest concern that I hear, and when I go out and talk to residents in my district, when seniors come to see me, and you know, I hang out a lot at the Liverpool Legion, and there's a lot of seniors. They have their seniors club there,
mm-hmm.
and I sit down there to once a month to be open to people coming in. And everyone that I see is asking me the questions: where and how do I do this? Like, how do I find this out? And that community down there is all talking to one another, and word of mouth. That's how they're finding out. So we need to find out. There's so much out there, and I tell them 211. I give them the cards and put it on your fridge and call 211, because at least they're the first place that's going to help you to find out what's available in your community or where you have to go without having to maneuver through.
Yes.
Press this number, press that number, press that number. So that's a good one for them, for seniors to satisfy that. But yeah, I totally agree that we need this whole communication issue to get people, because the resources are most of the time are there. They're there in the community, they're available, it's just getting to the right one and advertising them to all of them, and you know, hopefully you're connecting as many people as you possibly can to those services.
Yes.
So that everybody's getting the most out of it. That's what we're missing, those things that are there that we're not connecting.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
Yes, I've enjoyed your presentation, the bad part of having a presentation like that is you see where the demographics sometimes lie, and where
mm-hmm.
the people who are answering, because you look at things like this, they say, well, they're very happy with the banking. Well, you are going to get that for North Queens. They don't have a bank, right? So or people that are far enough away, they're going to say they're extremely disappointed with the banking. But you're going to get here saying that 5% of these people are happy with the banking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not getting a true demographic of the whole thing, especially since more than half of Queens County is outside the area, but you're getting a higher percentage from the area. So I noticed how the response, like you talked about computers. I know a lot of people of 70 to 80 have computers, but they are, get on my emails, get off. I don't go searching around anywhere. I don't know what I'm doing. So yeah, they say they got a computer, but if you're going to post something on something, if they can't, they got to go to it. They're not going to find it there. So I think it is. It's almost like having no computer because they can't find their way around. So the word of mouth, which I think that's the big one. If you want anything done, it's word of mouth. Bulletin boards. Like I've talked to a lot of seniors before. Did you read the bulletin boards? No, I got nothing to buy. You know, I'm not looking to buy anything, so I just walk by bulletin boards. I'm not looking for anything. It works good on the post office because I can put things up there and they'll because that's something they can look at. And of course, as you get older, the more you see, it gets it just gets muddled. I'm to the age now when my wife's talking to me and I'm on the phone. That doesn't work anymore because I can't get two conversations going at once. So it changes as you get older. I'm on social sure housing, and we have two ladies who are on there who are representing the seniors. And you get a whole different perspective when you have people that are actually into the age brackets of wondering what their needs are, which are totally different than what the way I would perceive it. I would say, but I think they need this, I think I need that, and you say, no, that isn't what I need at all. So I think there is a strong need of having some seniors on committees to be able to say what their exact needs, not what we think they need.
Yeah.
So I think that is something. Roads, they talked about not being plowed. That's a total concern to me. I have had a lot of seniors who have called me the last few years of saying that a storm has come along, so they're plowing the other roads. I don't care if they don't plow Milton the second time. Get the side roads, because that person ever had a heart attack or anything else, they can't even get out of the house. We're putting them in danger by not doing this. And I've talked to this to GIR many a time. Just you've got to get those side roads right. The biggest thing is there, as you know, with seniors, is fear.
Yeah.
That's what they'll call, because they're afraid to say, what would happen? You know, I've had a heart attack the last year, and what would happen if I had another heart attack right now? And how would I ever get out? Well, how would you ever get out? I don't know. So I think those are things that they need to prioritize better and put things into perspective. Let's see what else, anything else. I guess that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Councilor Johnson? Trusty, great job. And I know you worked long and hard on this. And I think it's a testament of one of the things that we don't recognize enough is like our partnerships with groups like Queens Care Society and the ones that can do the legwork for us and bring out this information. And you know, it's like Deputy Mayor Kelly said, there's not a lot of surprises, but every time you hear something like this, even if there's no surprises, it enforces and reinforces the idea of what we need to be doing. In the demographics of this survey, hopefully this document will be able to use that as a tool, like it was intended, to build communities where we can attract seniors and be age-friendly when the time comes. And that doesn't start when you're 55 years old. That starts when the people are 35 years old. Just
right.
Some of the stuff we heard earlier today and some of the plans that are in place. And we're going to hear later on the agenda around branding and things like that. Hopefully this document becomes a big part of that. And we as a council start putting some stuff through a plan versus having this document and growing dust on a shelf until we get a chance to get to it or forget about it when the time comes. So kudos to you and the Queens Care Society for sure, and continue to bring these partnerships to the table that add some tools for us and make it valuable for our decision making. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor McLeod?
Good presentation, Trustee. You've done a good job in your statistics findings. There's always an issue that's been with trying to encourage people, seniors, to stay in their own homes, and there's programs and services that allow that with the home care workers and other programs. However, there's also a problem that's created, and that is seniors living alone feel isolated a lot of the time because they do not have that support of getting out more often or people coming to visit, that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. that creates an isolation program with people that are in their own homes, mm-hmm. do not have access to fellowship and, you know, these other programs. And so it might be an opportunity to develop some kind of programs that, in addition to what our churches do, and they have people that call our seniors and say, how are you doing today? Is there anything you need? You know, that sort of thing. So having a common kind of extended opportunity to have these people more exposed to visiting other places and getting out of their home, which I know we have transportation, but we don't have any groups that will actually go, people that actually go and take these people out to get them out of the isolation in their own home. I know my mom, she's 90, turned 90 in March, wonderful health condition. She's now living out at a wonderful facility, Hillsview Acres. When she was living at home, she rented an apartment on her own, and I was always there, my brother was there. However, when she was alone a lot of the time, she wasn't using the mental capacity to talk and discuss things, so her memory was not that great. Now that she's out with other people, she has really blossomed, and there hasn't been a real serious problem with that. So it's like if you don't use it, you lose it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern that a lot of seniors have. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a good thing, but then you create something else.
Yes.
That is not good.
Very true.
Any other counselor have a question or comment this morning? Thank you very much, Tressie. It's a good presentation, and certainly we'll be looking at what we can as a council do going forward.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Mayor and Council members, to present this morning.
It's 10:45. Everybody's getting a little tired. I'm going to call 5-minute recess to 10:50. We'll take 5 minutes. Council meeting is resumed for Tuesday, April the 23rd.
Are we supposed to pass this on?
10:50 a.m. We have a presentation, Medway River Salmon Association. Michael Fraley. Rand Alexander, I presume.
I have coffees up here.
Excellent, thank you. Could we have one now? Follow along. Yeah.
So you can share it one more.
Okay. Well, for starters, I'd like to thank the mayor and the council for letting us give a little presentation what's going on in your backyard. It's a big project. It's going to be Nova Scotia-wide. It's the rest of, you know, there are other rivers in Nova Scotia, and they're going to adopt this program. We're going to adopt it from the Fundy Park, which is it's tremendous success. So we just get a little film, show you guys what's going on up there, what's going to happen here. Just touch it. Oh, there it is.
Internet. Yeah, where's our IT guy?
Yeah.
Got an IT guy?
Yeah, just started this morning.
Dial up or?
Even below
satellite.
Below
holy.
Did you set this up?
Nothing to do with that.
There's no internet right now.
Yeah. Is there no internet?
Well, we can come back to that, it's gonna be difficult.
I have three bars.
Let Brian do your verbal first.
Okay, so what we were gonna show, because a picture means a thousand words, is a project that is occurring in the funding. The Midway River Salmon Association has been around for a number of years. And we are going to, we've got a way to adopt this program. And I'm gonna read from my letter here. Before I explain the program, I'm gonna explain what the Midway River Salmon Association is all about. A number of years ago, 20-some years ago, salmon stopped in the southern uplands. Stocks declined, fishing stopped, it was all over. About 15 years ago, some men from the Midway River decided to form a society. They wanted to help. And at one point, they had over 150 members actively trying to assist the river. They had consultations with DFO. They did various types of things like that. Nothing ever stuck, never really worked. There was different initiatives. There was a hatchery in Melton, or in up on the Mersey, that eventually died. And it was just, it was a project that a number of us were involved with trying to save that because we thought that was the solution. Well, the history and everything tells us that that's not the solution, but there's other ways of dealing with declining salmon populations. This video is explaining part of that. But anyway, in the fall of last year, the executive, we're a small group now, continued to ask questions. What can we do? So we approached DFO again to ask for a brainstorming session. We met with the guy that deals with salmon. He deals with lots of other things, but he deals with salmon.
Senior advisor. 5 hours brainstorming.
Brainstorming with them. And this, what came out of it at first was, and I almost left the room, was what didn't work. They kept telling us what didn't work, how much cost it was, the hatchery is gone. So we retrenched him, said, okay, what does work? What would you do if you had to do it? How would you recover salmon on the southern upland rivers, and in particular the Midway, because that's what we're focused on? They said we'd mirror the Fundy project. So what is the Fundy project?
So what the Fundy project is basically is they're collecting smolt coming down the river. They try to catch them as close to brackish water as they can get them. So then they take them and they transfer them to a site offshore, salt water. It's a secured site. Nobody can get at it. They're fed, they're monitored all the time. You cannot access this with a boat motor. You have to go in by rowboat because they want no human. They want to cut the human activity with the fish as low as possible. And then when they grow to adult salmon,
mature
adult salmon ready to spawn, we put them back in brackish water at the head of the river, preferably above the seals, so they can go up the river and do their natural thing.
To their natural spawning area.
They'll naturally spawn, and you'll get so many more eggs out of that way than you would get by doing it at a hatchery. And these are wild.
They're like, wild fish that have left the river, that have survived. They grew in the river for 2 or 3 years. They've been taken from it. They're supposed to go to sea for a year or two to wherever they go and come back. 1% comes back. So if you have a number, 500, five fish come back. If you have a number that you can take away that element and put them somewhere where they'll be safe and grow them out, you can put 500 back. And again, following all the protocols, all of the permits, it's not just something that we can just go and do. There's a whole procedure to this. But anyway, I want to go into a couple of other things. There's various partners involved with this. Once the seed was planted on this project, we got in touch there's always water concern, the health of your river and everything, that's been coming up, we've been studying that, looking at that for years and years and years. So we said, okay, we gotta address that, because when we get these salmon back in the river and they're spawning, we want the best environment that we can have for them. So we got in touch with Acadia, put research students on our river, help us with funding. They jumped all over it. We met with them, they're dealing with the funding of the students for long term, not just a 1 year term. We're looking at 5, 10 years, whatever it takes. They also said they could assist us because of the way they do things for funding, looking for the specialized equipment that we would need to catch the smolts, to look after the smolts, and to help transport the smolts. So that's Acadia. Then we reached out to the Fundy Park Recovery Program to get their input, because we didn't know what we were, we knew what they did, but we didn't know what it was all about. And many hours were spent by Raymond.
Yeah, I reached out to Corey Clark. He's the head guy on the Fundy National Park Recovery Program. And they are, it's crazy how good a recovery they're doing. Now their salmon are a little bit different than ours, because ours go to sea, they say, for 3 years. Now, we don't know for sure. This is, you know, this is what we're saying. They go to sea for 3 years, then they came back. The Fundy salmon, Atlantic salmon, stay in the Inner Bay of Fundy, and they come back to the river every year. There's some say that our fish do the same thing, because we're so close. So there's where Acadia's gonna come in. They're gonna help study that. They're gonna let us know. They're gonna tag our fish. Where's our fish going? How many years are they at sea? You know, how many returns? Because right now, the Fundy National Park, they're getting, if they put 500 fish in, you know, they're getting, well, they put 800 fish in last year and they got over 100 returns. That's gone to sea and returned back.
The prior year.
The prior year.
The prior year that they can measure.
So that is a tremendous success. That's better than what hatchery's ever done.
Plus so, all those fish are spawning, they're growing in the rivers, and they're, what we're trying to do is get a bump to the salmon population that's in the river in the genetically diverse way, so that it doesn't affect genetics like hatcheries do. You take one parent and one mother and one father, and you get 10,000 eggs, 10,000 fish, and they're all the same. No one wants that.
No, we're trying to keep all the genetics.
So that's what DFO's, one of their big things, is genetically diversity. So. And again, we're getting into a lot of extra points. We're trying to go on the high side of this, but we also got in touch with Nova Scotia Department of Fisheries. Keith Caldwell actually called Raymond back in support of our proposal. And it's not a provincial jurisdiction, it's a federal jurisdiction, but we want to have all the stakeholders on side, so the provincials were on side. Caldwell got in touch with Nova Scotia Salmon Association because there's a gentleman by the name of Eddie
Halfyard
who's doing terrestrial liming on the West River, and they're studying it and they're trying to bring the sustainability of bringing fish back on their own, and that's what our long-term goal is to give it a boost and get the environment right so that it will sustain itself for the next 100 years. We don't have to get involved with it. So, and they're also looking into, one of Eddie's big things is terrestrial liming, so. And then, we need a place to put the fish. We've got to have a safe Greenland, Iceland, wherever. We approached Cook's, because they have the expertise, and the Nova Scotia Aquaculture Association, and asked them if they would be willing to deal with this, because they were the ones that had been doing it for the Fundy.
They look after the Fundy fish, too. They have the expertise and the knowledge.
And they've learned along the way what works and doesn't work. So we don't have to learn that. And they've more than agreed to be our partners on this project. And they've committed to the long term. So where are we? This project is going forward. It's not going forward as far as fish out of the water this year, because the window was too short. We had a big meeting on March 29th with all the stakeholders. Not all, I haven't even named all of them.
No.
And there was commitments at that table to come back to the next meeting with things accomplished. And we were gonna be ready to hit the road next spring. Permits, sites, training. I forgot to mention that we need to be trained on how to handle them, catch them. So we're going to New Brunswick, we're going to West River.
To be trained on how to run this.
We're going with federal fisheries,
quite a dangerous operation.
So there's a lot of different training things going on. So I'm just going to read a couple of things. We are a small group of individuals that are trying to make an impact. The Midway River Salmon Association realizes that there are no easy solutions like salmon recovery. If there were, they would have been done. We are committed to this project in the long run. We are determined to follow all the guidelines, procedures of the federal and provincial governments, and we feel that our parties and stakeholders are committed as well. One of our executives has stated over and over, it is unacceptable to do nothing. We know that there are some wild salmon smolts on the Midway River now, but we do not know for how long. We have to act now. And in closing, I'd like to thank you for letting us make this presentation.
Before you close, I'd like to ask Christine, would you like to try to reboot that? Just in case it's lost its connection.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And this project, we will be the leaders of Nova Scotia. Like, there's nobody else in Nova Scotia doing this. If we do this with partners, you know, with Cooks, with the Acadia University,
Dalhousie, Nova Scotia Salmon Association.
It's
thank you.
Oh, there's no
volume? I don't know how much volume you're gonna get. That's as loud as it's gonna go.
Can you pull the speaker down? The fish are all tagged. They have a tag that they can put on them when they're put back in the water, and then they can track, and that's part of what Dow and Acadia will be doing. And it's not overly expensive. It's not like thousands of dollars per fish. It's like $2 or $3. But the fish would go over a sensor that would be in certain places, and they could tell. That's how they knew that 80 fish returned. There's a lot of information, I'm sorry. But this is on the Fundy website. And see, it's showing there where the fish might be going, but like I said, only 1% come back. DFO is even saying less than 1%. And since you can't hear it, I'll keep talking. The Midway River runs from Port Midway all the way to our county line and past the county line, so it covers the whole eastern section of our river, of our county. So it is a huge watershed. And another, I use one of Raymond's sayings, one of mine is, we have the rivers in Nova Scotia. I've been all over the world, lots of different places fishing, and we have some of the nicest rivers. All we have to do is work on them. Well, Nova Scotia has an unbelievable potential. It's one of another piece to the puzzle. And I read about tourism, and they say we got to increase tourism. We're 2.5 billion to 4 billion, but what's the plan? Green, natural.
And we don't have a facility like this. I mean, this is, would be dreams if we did.
Thanks, Chris.
Take me in, it's worked yet. See which one?
That's good.
You want to reset it back?
You need it to get the. population back on track.
Come back, just hold the cursor back.
On Canada's Atlantic coast, between New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, is the Bay of Fundy. Here, among the highest tides in the world, we find the last remnants of the Inner Bay of Fundy Atlantic salmon. It's one of the most endangered species in eastern North America. But Fundy National Park and its partners are trying to bring it back, and they may be close to a breakthrough. In the Bay of Fundy, the salmon is an iconic symbol of a healthy environment. It acts as a bridge between the forest and ocean. After spending their early years living in freshwater streams, salmon travel to the nutrient-rich waters of the ocean to grow into adults. Once mature, they return to their natal rivers to spawn, starting the cycle again and bringing with them nutrients that help river ecosystems thrive. Most Atlantic salmon head to the Labrador Sea to feed, where they spend up to 3 years before returning to spawn. But the incredible Fundy tides carry so many nutrients that salmon here never have to leave the bay to find the food they need and mature in just 1 year. After practicing this shortened migration for thousands of years, the Inner Bay of Fundy salmon have become genetically distinct from other Atlantic salmon. The fact that these fish are special has long been known to people here, who call the salmon the king of fish. For centuries, the yearly return of 40,000 salmon to the bay's rivers was an important part of the local culture and economy. Sadly, today, fewer than 200 salmon return to spawn annually. So why is this once abundant fish now facing imminent extinction? The short answer is that no one knows. Scientists suspect that something is happening in the ocean environment. When the Inner Bay of Fundy salmon was listed as endangered in 2001, people here knew they had to take action. Fundy National Park collected some of the last young salmon from park rivers and put them into a hatchery to preserve the unique genetic makeup of the fish. Today, the live gene bank at the MacDaQuack Biodiversity Facility is the fish's final defense against extinction and the foundation of the Fundy Salmon Recovery Program. Under the stewardship of the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, fish are grown here from the original genetic stock and released back into the rivers. While the gene bank has kept the Inner Bay of Fundy salmon alive, after releasing fish for more than a decade, there's been no marked increase in adults returning to the rivers to spawn. But along the way, researchers discovered something interesting. The more wild exposure the fish had, the better their chances of survival, and fish that hatched in the wild were the most robust. The problem was that a lot of spawning-aged adults would be needed to get the population back on track. Here's what's being tried now. Young salmon from the gene bank are being released into rivers and given time to grow in the wild. But instead of letting all the juveniles head out into the ocean, where chances of survival are slim, some fish are captured and transported to the world's first wild salmon marine conservation pond on Grand Manan Island in the Bay of Fundy. Here, at a little place called Dark Harbor, Fundy National Park has partnered with the province of New Brunswick, Atlantic Canada Fish Farmers Association, and Cook Aquaculture, who have the know-how to grow large numbers of salmon in sea cages. Getting the fish from the rivers to the farm is the responsibility of the Fort Folly First Nations highly skilled habitat recovery team. Once at the farm, the salmon benefit from exposure to the ocean and are kept safe until spawning age. In coming years, thousands of adult fish will be moved from the Wild Salmon Marine Conservation Farm back to their spawning grounds in Fundy Rivers.
We won't need helicopters.
We won't need helicopters.
It's not as remote.
The hope is that they'll produce enough offspring to jumpstart the wild population. The Fundy Salmon Recovery Team can even monitor the fish after their release, thanks to trackers inserted by the University of New Brunswick scientists.
That's what Acadia will do for us.
The tide may be turning for the Inner Bay of Fundy Atlantic salmon. Early results indicate the survival rate of offspring from these adults is much higher than with past recovery methods. For local communities, the anticipation of the salmon's return is growing. Hundreds of people attend salmon releases and participate in Fundy National Park's Swim with Salmon program. The Fundy Salmon Recovery Program now serves as a model for others working to recover wild salmon populations. Once again, connecting the ocean to the forest and Canadians with nature. To learn more and to get involved, visit pc.gc.ca/fundy.
Okay, so now I'll close by saying that you'd like the mayor and council to consider our project whenever you're making decisions on things in
the near future.
In the future. And
is there any questions? Do you have any questions about the project?
Deputy Mayor Kelly?
The Fundy project, how long has that been going and how much has they recovered so far for the funding?
Well, it's been going on since 2001.
Right.
But the enhanced part of the project is 6 years.
5 to 6 years.
Right. Because this, I'm just trying to understand this whole process, and this is quite a long.
It's
we realize we're taking on a big commitment, but thanks to, you know, Acadia, Cooks, Dalhousie, the federal government, Nova Scotia government, the federal government, they're all involved in this.
Right. Why is the salmon declining on the Medway River? But according to that, it was because they're going up to the ocean and they don't come back.
Yes.
But they don't know why they're not coming back. Something's happening in the ocean and they don't know what it is.
Right.
No. And part of what we've discussed with DFO and with our partners, because there is special technology now, they have monitors out in the ocean, and if you put tags on your fish that go to sea and it pings, you can tell where they're going. And we're part of our project is to work with that as well. As well as working on the river. Some stuff that's in your notes I didn't touch on, but there's lots of different parts to this, and another part is getting your river as healthy as it can be to get the most smolts to live in it, and then try to figure out what's the problem. Where's the problem? Is it at the mouth of the river? Is it predators? Or is it out to sea with lack of food, or what it is? And that's, these monitors will help us do that.
Yeah, because unless you figure out why they're not coming back, you can't forever keep taking them out and putting them back in.
No.
Because they have to.
You just got to give it enough of
sitting for the rest of your life.
Exactly. But if we had to keep the salmon alive, that's what we'll have to do.
But that's not what we're after. We're after sustainability.
We want to find out what's going on at sea. This is
and
part
our
of our. This is part of our project. We're going to find out what's going on.
And what's the end result then of this? This is sport, recreational salmon fishing you're talking
about. Well, to me, it's bigger than that. It's that they won't go extinct because they're in danger of going extinct.
If we know something now, it's not going to happen.
And we have predators in other rivers that could make them go extinct, especially at the levels that they're at now. So if we don't get boosts in these rivers, they will be extinct.
Right.
It's just a matter of time. Because we've been watching it now since the early 90s, and there seems to be a little bit of good stuff happening because we're on the river a lot, but nothing. But at that rate, it would take hundreds of years for something. And by that time, something else will come along and be their downplay. That's why we're getting so many different groups involved to cover all of the different. We're driving the bus. We're saying, okay, let's fix the river. Let's understand the river. Let's understand the predators. Let's give the fish a boost all together. Let's do it all at the same time instead of, we've studied the river. DFO has been working on the harbor and the predator stuff, but they really haven't come up with anything because they don't have any enough fish to
do the studies.
To do the studies with. And if private industry and volunteers will get involved like we are, because that's the new model, governments aren't going to do this stuff for us. They haven't done it. We have to get together. We have to form partnerships and come up with a plan to make this last forever. And that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
Councilor Frehley?
Great presentation. Certainly nice to see salmon in their natural environment. And as you said, it has, I think it has so much more to do with the environment and less about fly fishing, but they kind of go hand in hand in the end. But my children and I own property on the Medway River, so this is important to me as well. But I do have some questions concerning, first, the river. There's been some controversy over what's happening at the mill and greenfields in the river. Do you think that will affect the success of...
If they weren't trying to correct it, but they are trying to correct their their pollution problem. He's working hard on it.
Yep.
I was out at the site. I've been out, you know. There's people out there, people live on the river. They called me, and I went out and looked firsthand. You know, Freeman's is trying to do what they can do right now, and that is going to definitely help.
Right.
Because we are looking at, like, by the time we catch our salmon, by the time we catch our smolt, and you're looking at, you know, almost a two-year period before we get to put those back in the river.
Okay.
So hopefully by then, Freeman's will finish doing what they're doing.
Well, I'd like to add to that. We've got Acadia involved that are going to be doing water tests. One of the things that we've asked, because we don't know, is it causing a problem?
Right.
We want them to take samples to determine at different levels of the river what it is and what they think the impact would be. We also, this has all happened since November.
Right.
Like, we've only, I'm full-time work. And he's full-time working on this project.
I retired, so this is...
So we've got all kinds of things we want to do. One of them is we want to go to Freeman's and talk to them. And if we can partner in on environmental sides to get funding or assistant funding or get them to understand, this will happen with Halfyard because he's also studying the whole lower river. We're talking about from Greenfield down. So he's going to be... studying that aspect with terrestrial liming, because he's big on the terrestrial liming, which is a long-term goal for every species in our river, and for the environment around the rivers. The trees and everything do better when the pH is right. So.
And since we started this project, the river wasn't slated for electrostating, for a whole river electrostating. It is now slated for
that. What that means is DFO will go and do spot checks at certain locations
to see what's what on the river.
And through statistical analysis, they'll be able to tell the species, the health of the insects, the fish, the aquatic animals in that water. It hasn't been done in 10 or 12 years, and we wanted it done again in a volunteer.
So, could you explain you're getting the smaller fish and you're putting them out in a pen in the harbor?
It'll be in a secure site in the harbor. It may not
be
our
harbor.
We don't
even know where the site hasn't been determined.
No, that's for cooks, and the government will sit down, and all the players will all sit down and discuss where this pen should be.
Okay, so if you're going to do that, and when that happens, they'll be fed the same fish as a
separate
feeding?
Now, cooks could be a little more elaborate on that, but when I asked the question the other day to two cooks, you know, what we're going to do, it's a softer food. It'll be a different chemical, different makeup, you know, whatever they put in them, be different, altogether different. Now, cocos is over there.
So it's not a natural food?
It'll be all natural food.
There's no hormones allowed in agriculture food. It's certified that it doesn't have, you cannot put a pellet with antibiotics in the water, in our ocean, because it's public domain.
That's probably a different conversation. The other thing is, do you have the same concern in the wintertime with freezing a fish, like the flash freeze? That concern?
No. Some of the questions I've asked about that is that's one of the reasons why they won't be fed by going in by boat. Because when they hear the motor, they'll come to the surface, no time to feed, a lot of them just come up. So on the days that it's too cold, the water will be monitored, because they'll have monitors on the, in the water all the time, back at their Bridgewater location, see how cold the water is. So if it's too cold, they won't go in that site, because they don't want the fish to come up. They'll just leave them alone. They'll be same as a natural fish. They don't feed. They just.
Is it a concern?
Not too much.
It is,
but
I think it'll be mitigated. They also can mitigate it because they have currents and flows, and because they monitor, they have probes in the water that monitor the sites and the water flows and all of that. So they can pinpoint the most likely spot that if there was a cold interchange that would shock the fish, our fish wouldn't be in that danger zone. They would.
It's interesting because it kind of makes sense, but yet it's not being practiced in the fish farms in the harbor. So,
well, that's not, you'll have to talk to them.
I understand that. But the last thing is, what happens if there is a break at the existing fish farm off Coppins Island and those salmon, which we've heard of before, end up going in the river? Does that not compromise the whole project?
We asked that question, and those fish are not matured.
Do you want to go up the river? They're not matured. They're
egg-wise.
Do you want to go to the river? And
your fish.
Our fish are going to be fed and handled differently than the farm fish.
No, but But what happens if you get the program up and running and you have successful full-size fish in the river, and then suddenly there's a break up Coppins Island and the large fish come up the river?
Yeah,
but
that's what I'm saying.
I did ask that question. They said, they told me they have a escape plan and. They have a plan to go by, right away put their nets out, net the river, do what they have to do to try so no fish go up. Any fish caught will be checked, and they can do it within 5 minutes. They can tell if it's one of our fish or one of their fish. That they can check, they can do all the checks, whose fish is whose. I mean, science is incredible now, what they can do with science.
But, just one more thing.
Yep.
So are these the answers you're getting from Cooks, or are you getting them from an independent?
I'm getting them from up in New Brunswick. I've called Corey Clark.
Okay.
He's a fish biologist up there. He's in charge of the park, National Park. I have asked Cooks questions. I won't lie, they've taken us on their site because we wanted to see what was going on. We want to know where our fish is going, how they're going to be handled. Is it a clean environment? Or we wanted to know roughly what their site looked like. So they took us out for a tour, and we got to look at their site from one end to the other, answer us any questions. They explained to us our trap, or pen, whatever you want to call it, is going to be a lot smaller than what is out there, because it's a lot less fish.
Right.
So we explained that. But of all my information I've gotten, I've usually contacted Corey Clark up in New Brunswick.
And DFO. We're talking to DFO.
Now, we can't do nothing unless DFO approves us. And trust me, the guy, the senior advisor, he'll tell you right up front
what you can and can't do.
Not to do.
He's been telling us for years. It was always we couldn't do anything.
And
this is a breakthrough.
That's right. Mr. Mayor, he knows that. He knows this guy personally, and he'll tell you how it goes. And he said this is what it took. Like I say, it took us 5 hours of brainstorming with him in a small room. When we went in, we said we agree to disagree. We're not leaving here until there's something done. But we have a plan. And it took us 5 hours to come up with this. And we're saving the Atlantic salmon. We are going to save the Midway salmon.
Well, I certainly understand why you're so excited about this. Because I know that people have been asking this question and for help for many years. And they've not received anything. Maybe a little bit. But so I understand why you're so excited about this. But as always, we have concerns because you don't want all of this hard work to be jeopardized in the end if there's things that are so close that could change the whole trajectory. Thank you.
I am going to move on to Councilor McLeod, but before I do, I want to advise the public attending today that the only time the public can speak at a council meeting is during the public comment question session. So I would ask all that are attending as a member of the public to please refrain from trying to speak during presentations or council discussion other than in that one public comment question session. Councilor McLeod.
Before I ask Mike and Raymond the question, I just want to also say that Mr. Mayor, when you opened up the meeting, you asked for respect from the audience, so I think maybe we should continue having respect and no sighs and no reaction at all, because it's disturbing to hear that when others are making comments. And we give every right to our presenters to be heard and not have the background reaction, which would be a negative impact on the presentation. I'm excited about your program. I know I've had friends that have been involved in recreational salmon fishing. Years ago, it was a big industry here in Queens County and in Nova Scotia. It's still up in New Brunswick somewhere. I don't know how it's doing there in the Miramichi and Newfoundland, but I know it was really a big recreational program, and it brought a lot of people to our community, and I'm hoping that will be recovered again by your efforts. I don't know much about the process. I don't pretend to know anything about it, but I do know that there is extinction of our salmon in our oceans. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Cook wouldn't be doing what they're doing, or any aquaculture business wouldn't be doing that. Mike, you've been in the aquaculture business when you had your
muscle firm.
Mm-hmm. So you know how important it is, and how important it is to protect the environment from any hazards or whatever, from what you
I was worried about what people were going to do around me, because they could destroy me.
Absolutely. So, and you're not concerned about that. I have a question about our rivers and streams, and I know there were comments about liming, and I know in Norway, in those places, they have the lime, they lime the rivers with whatever.
Lime dosers.
Lime dosers.
Exactly. Has that been done here on the Medway, or I know, I think, wasn't years ago that they had a pilot project on the Medway with liming?
Before my time, I've been with the association about 6 or 7 years, but before my time, they've done some liming on some of the tributaries, the brooks, because we weren't able to work with salmon,
mm-hmm.
we've been working with trout.
The trout.
So we wanted to put our trout into a very good environment so they could go back there and spawn. So we've tested a lot of the brooks, and we've enhanced some of them. If they're bad, we just stay away from it. But there is no really bad pHs. The pHs, and I'm not an expert on it, the research that they do will clarify it more, is a good range for both trout and salmon. And the critical time, under my understanding, is the pH is most critical for salmon eggs 6 weeks after they hatch. For about 6 weeks. So the lime a river 365 days of the year is not not necessary. The lime sections of the river, because they will find those sections. We understand that they'll find the spawning areas, and if that has got a good pH and you lime that area, then you've got more success. And that's what we're trying to identify, the in-river issues when Acadia. And Acadia is going to be starting, as far as we know, this spring, if not by summer, because they've already got some funding arranged. So we're on the road. Our feet are hitting them. We're trying to get everyone moving in that can be moved at this time.
So with your, trying to understand this, so a lot of this is happening because of acid rain and that sort of thing, with conditions, but that's being dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
To some
degree.
So then they release these to the smolt or whatever?
Smolt.
A salmon egg turns into a smolt in 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
In the river.
All right. So then once the smolts are then released in this confined space in the natural environment,
yeah.
Which a natural salmon would come from the river out to the ocean.
Right.
So apparently there's something happening in our oceans that is preventing this to happen, because the salmon stocks are way down.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, we don't know, or is it because of the
seals? And you've got low numbers.
Predators?
Well,
we wish
we knew,
okay.
But you also have low numbers of them leaving the river. So
okay.
A low percentage of a low number doesn't, but if you can start to give it a boost, I think, this is my personal opinion, that if you can get a better body of moving, they're protecting each other.
I see. Okay. because there is a natural thing for
right.
themselves. And I know we've had issues and concerns about the aquaculture in the Liverpool Bay with fish farms, and you know that's happening. One of the biggest concerns about expansion of these fish farms is how are we going to benefit from that from our municipality? And it has been about economic benefits. Does it outweigh the risks that you take with expanding or setting up new sites? With your projects, you don't have to worry about that because there's such a need for recreational salmon fishing and in our community that everybody would benefit from it, from the tourism aspect of it to improving our rivers and streams and that sort of thing, and also understanding the whole process of what's happening here. So I think it's a good project and I hope that it does work well for you. One other question I have, and that is, we talk about on land operations versus natural environment in the ocean. Has there been any discussion about that versus crooks putting in their little cages in the ocean, whereas they could do an on-land operation? Is that a possible?
There's no on-land operation that I know of. I've looked long and hard. I spent many hours talking to the government, provincial and federal government. Anybody that would listen to me, I talked to, trying to find, you know, places where I could get fish raised.
But the Fundy project
works so well.
And we haven't heard any negative things, and they've been doing it for 6 years, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Are they close to other fish farms, or where are they?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure on that.
Just looking at that for the benefit of everyone. Thank you, and I thank you.
Councilor Benson?
Yes, I enjoyed your presentation.
Thank you.
A few questions I have to ask is that...